Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 33, and I guess once again, it feels like we've had, I don't know, it feels like a slow week, but it's also not slow at all because
today hasn't been slow. Today has been a mad rush of news.
Yeah, and today's had some of the most interesting news too. I guess we could start with the Black Friday stuff. Those deals are kind of really good, surprisingly.
This is like the age-old tech debate. Do deals penalize your early adopters?
Yeah, I think yes and no. My thing is yes and no. Yes and no, because yes, it does, because obviously, you know, people bought the phone like yesterday and now they find out that it's $200 less and that hurts. But no, in the sense that if they put out really good deals and they hit the market really fast and they sell more phones, then in the long run, that'll be good for everyone. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you're an early adopter, if you're a Pixel fan, you should want Google to push more phones, I guess.
I doubt most people see it that way.
Probably not. I mean, I guess a lot of, I don't know. I feel like there is, honestly, I think there is a little bit of a grassroots fan base starting to build. And I think we've kind of started to watch this build as we've seen 9to5 Google grow over the last couple of years since the first Made by Google event. It seems like there's definitely some people, you know, popping up in our comment section on Twitter who are, you know, coming out of, you know, the Nexus fanboyism stuff and now are, you know, have a genuine appreciation for all of the hardware that Google's doing besides just phones. And, you know, the Pixel is just one part of that. And it's really cool to see, at least for me, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
What are the deals for Black Friday from Google Store? What are the highlights on those?
The highlights, it starts this Friday and it's a buy one, get one 50% off Pixel 3. Up to 50% off, I should add. It's not clear how exactly the terms of that are going to go down. But for most people, it's a killer deal.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. Does it mean that, like, if you buy, it's weird that they say up to.
Like, I guess the lowest priced one, or maybe there's some tiering going on.
Yeah, or like, yeah, it has to be like equal or lower to get the 50% off. Like, so if you buy the bottom end Pixel 3, you can only get 50% off of another bottom end Pixel 3. You can't get, you know, you can't get 50% off of a Pixel 3 XL if you buy a Pixel 3.
Probably. But yeah,
or something like that. Or maybe the more expensive models will be 50% off and the cheaper models won't be 50% off. I don't know. But it's a weird, I mean, it's a nice deal, but it's also kind of weird for a deal this good. If we look at the history of deals on the Google Store, it's not been exactly amazing, I don't think. But then again, this deal is kind of like a carrier deal. Like we've seen, you know, like every carrier does this kind of stuff with their monthly plans and stuff. So.
Yeah. So moving on from that, again, there's so many tiers of deals starting on various days. So on Thanksgiving Day, there's a new set of deals kicking off with mostly focused on the Google Home line. The Google Home Hub is $99, 50 bucks off, which matches a lot of other retailers. We have a $50 off the Home Mini $50 off the regular Home and the Google Home Max, which is standard, I guess. And there's a lot of mini bundles, like smart homes and lighting stuff with the Chromecast and I think the GE Smart Light. So I think it really reflects Google wanting to get people into their first smart home, which has been a really big push from what I can tell. Besides that, the other very good Pixel deal is $150 off a Pixel 3 on Black Friday and $200 off a 3 XL. That is a... starts on Black Friday. And
yeah.
The thing with like those buy one, get one deals, I think that's reflective of you wanting to get somebody else to switch with you, which makes sense as a strategy. If you're previously iPhone users, you also want to get your maybe your significant other on an Android phone, messaging and whatnot. So it makes sense. But I think most people who just buy one phone would really like this $150, $200 off deal and wish it came much sooner as maybe the pre-order offer.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Google sees a lot of returns this week, because there's definitely plenty of people that have bought their phone in the last week or two that are still within that return window. And is it 2 weeks for the Google Store to just return no question asked? I think it's 14 days. I'm pretty sure it's 14 days. And I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the phone's only been out for a month, so I wonder what percentage of buyers bought one in the last 14 days and are going to return it and buy the Pixel on Black Friday. And if
within 15, would they be able to,
15 calendar days?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's tons of people that are definitely able to do that. I think there's no reason, there's nothing that could stop them, right? Like,
no, yeah, definitely. But I think that the early pre-orders and buyers who received it on day one.
Yeah, the only people that wouldn't qualify were like the super earliest of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that sucks. I mean, there's no way around it. That just sucks. I'm not one of them because I have review units. I know Ben Schoen is one of them. He
had, as am I,
both of his delivered in the first week. And yeah, you too. You had yours delivered in the first week, I think. So yeah, it sucks. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't know. Does it kind of feel like an admission of like, I don't know, like, does it feel like they're admitting like failure? Does it feel a little bit like, oops, we overpriced these? Do you get that sense at all, or
I'm really not sure about that. But what I feel very strongly on is the idea that they should have made this the pre-order gift if they're cutting it so drastically in price. It's a 1 month difference, and to just start offering this deal now seems arbitrary.
Yeah, it's weird, but I mean, I guess it's good for anyone that wants a Pixel 3 really bad.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it gives me the sense that I guess one thing to note is that it's Black Friday only, so it's not like this is going to be, you know, this is not a permanent price drop. It's going to be a 1 day thing. And the other thing is, we're assuming that they're going to let people order an unlimited number of them. You know, it's like, we could talk about Xiaomi and how they recently did the Singles Day sale, and they sold like, they advertised these deals for these phones, and they had in one or two or three in stock, and then they sold out in like 2 seconds. Which I'm not saying Google's going to do that, but
quick correction. It's 3 days. The one that starts on back on 22nd is a 3 day offer.
Oh, so okay. So the $200 off is a 3 day offer. Yeah. So it's November 22nd through the 25th, basically.
Yeah. Sorry, that's Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So it's 3 days, but it's still 3 days. It's, I mean, these phones are, unless something crazy happens, they're going back up to full price right after that. So, I mean, in a sense, it's like, you know, Black Friday deals are Black Friday deals. So, you know, it's not all that surprising to see a decent deal on the phones on Black Friday. But in another sense, $200 off the top model it's a pretty chunky discount. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But to me, it seems like, I mean, call me a negative Nelly, but, you know, it seems like these phones probably are not selling as well as they would have hoped, which is, you know, it is what it is. I don't know if that's true, but that's what it seems like. Other deals that were notable were 50% off the Google Clips on, where is that one? I don't see that one on here.
It's on the...
Is it? Okay. Yeah, so that 50% off Google Clips is a pretty decent deal.
We're not selling.
Yeah, it's another thing. It's like they're not selling those at all, and they're, you know, they're fine. I don't know any one person who owns Google Clips and like raves about it.
Yeah, I might pick one up. I've been meaning.
But yeah, it's a good collector's item. The Titan security key is 20% off for one of those days. That, one of the weird things about these deals are that they're so scattered. They're all happening at different times.
Yeah, it's very much a Google one Black Friday deal. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I guess that's right. And then we're seeing this Google Home Max deal: buy two and save $150. So you're getting two Google Home Maxes for $650. I guess that might appeal to the DJs out there.
Yes, DJs. But
yeah, I guess that was the most, I don't know, that was just shocking to me to see how good these deals are. What other stories did we see today? Another thing that happened today was Night Sight is now rolling out, which is not really news because we got the modified Google Camera APK with Night Sight enabled a few weeks ago now. And as far as our Ben can tell, there's no functional difference between that version and the version that's now rolling out to everyone. Mm-hmm. In terms of the results that it's putting out. But yeah, you have any thoughts on Night Sight rolling out today? Have you had a chance to use it at all? Have you had a chance to capture any photos?
No, I have not. The thing with Night, I like taking photos that are super dark and have like minimal lights in the distance. So that's an odd thing about me. Just a framing effect, but this would have been really killer if they launched with it. If they day one, this feature is already enabled. In terms of the advertising, the unified advertising message around this being a great camera. Because the response to this feature is universal praise across the board.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've actually, you know, noticed that today. If you've been following Google News at all today, it's like every outlet today is just plastered with praise for Night Sight. And you know, that's just unfortunate. Like the buzz, I mean, the Pixel 3, our traffic is one evidence of this. And I'm sure other Android sites saw the same thing. Pixel 3 was like the most buzzed about phone of the Android space of the whole year. It's not going to be the best selling, phone of the whole year, but it was like, I think in many ways, probably the most hyped. The leak rumor cycle was insane this year. And then, you know, the event was a really big deal too, but alongside, you know, the Home Hub and the Pixel Slate, it all tied together to make one really big launch. But I mean, the camera has been the story of the Pixel for the last 2 years. And of course they really, really hit the camera hard this year. Again, but the Pixel, the Night Sight thing is like the star of the show on the camera this year, even though it's not necessarily exclusive to Pixel 3.
Maybe that's one reason why they didn't launch with it. But I'm looking at all these different camera modes, like photo booth and whatnot. And honestly, Night Sight is the best one out there. I don't know. They put in the initial ads push, they focus on like photo booth as their primary camera feature. And in retrospect, I think Night Sight would have been a better case for the first wave of reviews.
Yeah. And they talked about Night Sight during the event and they showed that side by side with the 10S. They mentioned it and they should have known with seeing just how much hype that generated. You know, there even at the event when that was shown, that was like, of the whole like hour and a half long event or whatever, however long it was, an hour, that was the biggest gasp moment of the entire thing. So, you know, I think all the positive PR today is further evidence of how this feature is one really important to people. It's like a popular thing. Like everyone knows that feeling of taking a photo in the dark and just having it be entirely unusable. So it's like a popular feature that the masses are going to appreciate. And it's unfortunate. I agree with you. I think it's unfortunate that they didn't have all of this hype and all this positive news cycle around the actual launch of the phone. And now it's just like coming on the back end two or three weeks later, or a month later or whatever.
Which could be said that they Google wanted a second push, a second wave of hype for the camera, but
yeah, I guess, you know, it's not going to be a lose. It's not going to be a net negative in the end, but
could have had a bigger impact.
Yeah, for sure. Any other stories on that happened today? I'll talk about Google Glass a little bit later, but.
So yesterday, Google invited members of the press to a house in San Francisco decked out in all manner of smart home devices. They're getting ready for the holiday season. So the thing is, smart home stuff works so much better if you have a gigantic house, in my opinion. I have a medium apartment, and I think you also have like a smallish house. I think you once said that you can trigger one home that's like across your house from the main room or something like that.
Yeah.
Like when you have these gigantic multi-story setups, it works really well to emphasize like features like broadcast, like sending an intercom message across the house, or when you're using a Nest security cam to like just check in on the living room or whatever. Like something, it feels foolish if you have like a small house and you put another camera in the living room. You could just walk in and see what's happening. But yeah, if you have a multi-story affair, it works. And I think there's an interesting discussion about like housing sizes and the American market and what Google's primary audience is.
Yeah, I can't see. So I guess in my situation, I'm renting right now, so there's only so much modifications I can make. You know, it's like I could, but I don't really want to, like, you know, take out the light fixtures and replace them with smart bulbs. And I don't want to replace all of my light switches with smart switches. And it's like there's a limit to what I can do personally. Mm-hmm. But I've reached that limit in terms of like what I can do within reason. I mean, I have all the Nest stuff pretty much except the Nest Yale lock, because I just don't want to go to the trouble of like, replacing the lock hardware and then like having to like switch it back when I move out or whatever.
So
there is something to be said about like the level of usefulness that you can attain in terms of smart home technology. It can only go so high depending on how big or how decked out your house is. In my case, I already have one Google Home per room at least. So I've got like seven of them. And I've got like three Nest cams. Like in my house, it's definitely overkill what I have already. So yeah, I completely agree with you. Was the house that that Google invited you to, was that like a three-story, like full-blown house or what?
Three-story. It was just a rental that I know. It was a pretty nice three-story gigantic glass windows overlooking a pretty big yard, that kind of stuff.
Did they have the Google Gnome in the yard?
No, they did not. They didn't have a Google Gnome.
For those that don't know what we're talking about. I feel bad that I have to actually explain this. But
it wasn't a very good joke either.
It wasn't.
A very weak April Fool's affair.
It wasn't. Yeah, I'm just gonna pull it up real quick. So April Fool's a year or two ago, I think it might have been 2 years ago, they announced Google announced the Google Gnome. I'm actually going to do a screen share for the first time on the podcast. So I apologize for audio listeners who won't be able to see this, but we're basically showing the Google Gnome. And if you're listening on the audio, you can go on, you can go on the,
I just want to add, it's not worth looking up for the audio listeners. It's not worth it. It's not.
Well, there it is. For those that are not audio listeners, there's Google Gnome. It's basically, it's a Google Home that's like designed like a Google Gnome or a gnome. And they, you know, it's the whole joke. But yeah, it's
okay. There is a real product there in making a Google Home that is you can put outside and is water resistant and maybe has like a flood lamp to help illuminate the outside scene. There's a product there, but this is not the one they're showing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's that. That's my first experiment with doing the screen share on the podcast. I'm hoping to get to a point where we can use that more effectively. But yeah, what was the point of that event besides just showing off everything working together? Like,
so there were some new features that they announced. So broadcasting is this like pseudo intercom feature that I mentioned. So in the coming weeks, you'll be able, apologies for the fire truck, there's an ongoing fire here. Good podcasting. Yeah, anyways, so broadcasting. So in the future, you'll be able to reply from a smart display or a regular smart speaker. So you can have bi-directional conversations. It honestly seems like another messaging solution. But I guess there is a use case for a limited short message that's not really live, but just sending back and forth. But the more I talk about it, it sounds like you're just having a phone call. But
yeah.
According to Google, this is one of their most popular features for Google Home. So they definitely built on that. A more minor addition is they're adding recipe cards to smart displays in time for the Thanksgiving season. Okay.
Yeah.
And the last two major ones, the Google Clock is integrating with assistant routines. So when you dismiss an alarm, you can have some events start kicking in. And actually a cool feature is telling Google Home to enable your phone do not disturb verbally, which is kind of a neat futuristic feature. So you can just say hot word silence my phone to your Google Home, and it will do that on your device. But again, like the broader point of this event was just showcasing everything that Assistant can do. I think there's a slight discovery problem to Assistant actions at this point in how there's so many features that Google ramped up features so quickly that sometimes it gets buried. They have like weekly blog posts sometimes that detail what's new about Google Home, and it gets lost in the fray. And I think this smart home, which used to be like this futuristic decked out thing, that Google would benefit from maybe like showcasing these more in the wild. I think at South By, they also did a smart home decked out in assistive devices. Maybe there's a way that Google could scale it to like the broader public. I think that might do well to like really showcase how good these features can work together when you have a full ecosystem.
Yeah, that's actually really, really interesting. I didn't think about that. I was kind of wondering like, what's the point of this event? And there have been like lots of different things that have been done in this area. Like there have been multiple publications that have tried at different points to try the idea of like buying a home and like decking it out with like super high tech stuff, not just Google, but like, you know, like publications have tried this. Like I know I know the guys over at Android Authority had tried doing this and tried to start a site. I don't think it ended up going anywhere. CNET, I think, did this or is doing this, where they have a home or they own a home.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see that Google is like, oh, well, we already own basically everything that you need to like build your own smart home. And so it's like, we might as well just put everything in one place and just show it off. And that's exactly, you're exactly right. That's exactly what they did at South by last year. Was they call it the Fun House, I think. I was there, and it's basically we walked in, and it was kind of like a, you know, it was a brand activation. So they invited the public to see it. And so you got to walk through it and, you know, see all of the different Google smart home hardware and how it all worked together and stuff, which is, I assume, kind of similar to what you did, but yours was, it seems like it was more of a free flowing kind of event, or you got to walk around yourself. Whereas ours was like a track where you had to walk through, and they literally walked you through every single room and all the different things. But yeah, it's actually really interesting. Thinking about what Google's going to do in terms of retail and like in terms of getting their products into stores and like, and the end game eventually needing to have an Apple Store like model where it's like, you know, they can do better customer support and have like a showroom for their products and stuff like that, which is,
yes, a showroom.
It's not really happening yet. There's the pop-up shops that have happened every year for the last few years, but they don't have any permanent locations really. And the rumor is that there's one that's coming to Chicago, but it's actually interesting that you bring this up, because it seems like it might make sense to do a pop-up shop in the form of a, you know, a demo, so to speak, of how Google, all of Google's hardware products, considering, I mean, everything except the phone is basically smart home stuff. You know, if you put Google Home in that category, everything except the phone and the Pixel Book, and I guess now the Pixel Slate, which we can talk about how that hasn't shipped yet. But yeah, like a lot of their stuff is all smart home stuff. So maybe the best showroom would actually be pretty much what you went to. Mm-hmm. It would be cool if there was something that was like that was open to the public all year long, and people could just buy stuff there on the spot.
Google should buy IKEA. I've been advocating this for a very long time now, and just create physical spaces.
I could see them. It would be interesting if they had a partnership of some kind where they, you know, went into an IKEA and you know,
all the IKEAs have had a dedicated corner.
Yeah. I guess the problem with that is IKEA's like they're trying to compete. Yeah.
And they're trying to be platform agnostic. They support HomeKit. They support Assistant, Alexa. So it wouldn't look too good.
That level of partnership is probably not going to happen.
Mm.
But yeah, that's really interesting, and I hope that to see them do something similar at South by, because I think it's a really effective way of showing off.
Yeah, like we said last week, the smart home like 10, 20, 15 years ago was like this super limited thing for billionaires. Now it's in the reach of everybody.
Yep. All right. I guess that is that. We talked about Night Sight a little bit. I don't know. I'm hoping to see. My problem with Night Sight, going back to that for a second, is I don't live anywhere interesting. Uh-huh. So in terms of like taking photos at night, there's not really much to take photos of. So.
Yeah, you don't go to a concert every weekend, do you?
Right. The best stuff are like concerts and bars and like city life and you know, like those kind of environments. So yeah, I don't really have any deep thoughts on Night Sight yet. But it is impressive, and it's more impressive, and it definitely is winning right now versus the other similar initiatives, like the what's the night mode from OnePlus called again?
Nightscape, I think.
Yeah, Nightscape. We'll do our side by side with that pretty soon. So keep an eye out for that. What should we go to next? What else happened?
There's some Android news. So last week, towards the latter end of last week, there was the Android Dev Conference. which is this medium-sized event in Mountain View just for developers, where Google has various talks about adopting the latest platform features. I know developers love it compared to something like I/O because it's a smaller scale, better office hours, less people, that kind of thing. And one of the sessions was about dark themes and how Google is encouraging Android apps. First off, they had this effort over the past 1-2 years to measure the color, the actual color, the impact of color on battery percentage and battery usage, battery consumption, that kind of stuff. And they found that there was a noticeable tens of percentage points difference in a bright theme versus a dark theme. And they've kind of admitted that the direction of material theme versus what came before it, hollow, was kind of a mistake in terms of power consumption savings. So they're making it, on a system level, they're making it easier for developers to add dark themes that can automatically switch during time of day, depending on what the users want. But overall, this reflects the trend of Google's own apps switching to darker themes and offering that to users.
So you just said that they're kind of admitting that the direction of the material theme was a mistake?
The Android team was saying that.
Let's really?
Put it that way, yeah. There was like a cheeky slide that said, it was along the lines of, guess what color we've been pushing you to adopt? And it was a white slide.
Yeah, but like, don't you think that it was part of the plan all along for getting rid of the bold colors of the old material and replacing it with something that's easier to invert? Like, it's almost impossible to invert the colors of, you know, a bright blue app and make it black. But if you have a white or gray app, primarily white or gray, it's easy to invert them and just make it a dark app. Don't you think that maybe you didn't get the sense that maybe that was like part of the grand plan all along? Or did you get the sense that we're pushing white on you, that was a mistake, we're walking that back? Or did you get the sense that it was like, we're pushing white on you, but we have a bigger plan here?
I definitely think it was walking that back. I think on day one of material design, I don't think that was the plan. That was maybe a consideration with the material theming.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But I don't think from day one that was the plan when they switched from hollow to the first iteration of material design.
No, what I meant was part of the grand plan of switching from basically what we call material design 1.0 to material design 2.0. Like, you have to think that they probably had that in mind. Like, this research is probably not new. You know, it's been a known thing that if you have an OLED display and you power fewer of the pixels, that it uses up less power from the battery. Like, that's just like a simple, like, that's been a known thing. Now we have hard data to show what the impact is. But, you know, it's been a known thing that dark pixels use up less power. Mm. And so to me, it's like they've probably known this for years. And if they've known it for years, then part of the original thinking with going to all white had to have been this bigger plan of like, going to all white will enable us to do all black as well.
Again, at least, like,
I don't know.
That sounds right for material theming, but I don't see that as the case with material design 1.0. Like,
no, I don't either. I don't either. Mm-hmm. I think they were oblivious to it then, and not to mention the fact that OLED displays were not as popular then either.
True.
So,
very true.
I was just saying that it seems like it was intentional thing to go all white on the material theme, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is actually something that I tweeted about. Like, there are a lot of people, like whenever this data came out, how Google is encouraging dark themes and Android apps and giving us the numbers on how much less battery they consume. There was like several Redditors that I read that were saying like, well, that makes no sense. They've been pushing white on us for a year. You know, they've been pushing white into every single like corner of the OS. And to me, it's like, yeah, like, of course they are. They're doing that on purpose because now that everything's white, as we've seen, I think we're going to see the dominoes fall one by one by one, where all these white apps are going to have dark modes. And not only that, this kind of connects to what is Google's bigger plan for dark mode, which is right now there is a dark mode setting basically in the bowels of the developer options menu. And then we saw this week, the November security patch for the Pixel phones now switches you to the dark theme and on an OS level when you enable battery saver. So I think that what we, I mean, the question is Google going to make this a system level setting that affects every app that supports it? Is it basically going to be an API that developers can use that will be like, you know, we could have a toggle in the quick settings menu that is basically a dark mode toggle, and every app that you use that takes advantage of this feature could switch to dark mode, including all of Google's first party apps? That's like a possibility, but it doesn't seem like they're doing that right now because all their efforts and the way they're handling it with their first party apps right now are so scattered. There's no singular control over anything.
Yeah. They've always seemed hesitant to a theming, like a theming platform for Android in general. The people during the developer previews always see commits that might hint at a system level dark mode only for some official Google to say, no, that's not what's happening. And I think we've had like 2 or 3 years of that. Maybe that's finally going to change in the future. But so far, Google has never, they haven't gone all out in saying that here's a system level dark mode for you.
Yeah, so far, no. But it seems like in the last six months or less, I mean, our Ben Schoen did an article this week that just blew up, that was all of the Google apps that have dark mode and how to enable it. And a lot of them have gotten dark mode, including Google Contacts just this week. And so to me, it seems like they're taking this dark mode thing more seriously than they ever have, at least with their first party apps. And that's what makes me think that maybe part of the plan for Android Q is to bring it all together. Because, I mean, one by one, I mean, all these first party apps that have been like all white are now adding dark mode. So I don't know. Just seems like a natural
thing for them to do at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
If they ever need a big headlining feature for a platform release.
Which they need them every year because there's only so many major changes that you can bring to the operating systems when the mobile operating systems are this mature. It's like you're scraping around for a headline feature every year, pretty much. What else we have for Android stuff?
Sharing menu. Everybody, the much beloved sharing menu. Not according to Dave Burke, engineering VP for Android, that Google is working on a new design, a new implementation that loads faster, and that fixing is a priority for them. But it just has been taking a while.
Yeah, this was a weird case where Google sent out a PR statement via Twitter.
Yeah.
It's really rare that an executive will just reply to complaints on Twitter and say, as a matter of fact, we're working on that.
Yeah.
Much appreciated. I appreciate the transparency. I guess it's not rare if the company is Tesla.
And Google has that similar open culture for the most part.
Yeah. The other thing, I guess, that was kind of big that happened this year or this week was all the Google Health stuff, which you pretty much killed all the coverage on that this week.
Yes, this is a very fascinating look at the future. So Google and Alphabet, they have a lot of health efforts. So just off the top of my head, Google has Google Fit, which is deeply tied to Wear OS now going forward. There's signs that Nest wants to do some hardware devices to help seniors remain independent and live on their own. The AI, Google AI, from a more research point of view, they are applying machine learning to like cancer research, to identifying cancer cells. And the search team is also interested in like symptoms, offering knowledge panel cards when you Google a search symptom, so that kind of stuff. And outside of Google, there's, of course, Verily, which is their medical-focused alphabet company, which is working on sending out mosquitoes that have been sterilized to cut down malaria. That's an actual project which the company is working on. And various studies and medical health devices. And with all these products, Google finally wants to have one unified front. And last week, they hired this Dr. Feinberg. He was the CEO of an existing insurance medical system kind of thing. And he's going to be appointed to organize all of Google's efforts and basically dictate what consumer health products they're going to be. And the less interesting stuff is like the enterprise, offering secure solutions to host data, that kind of stuff. That's a Google Cloud thing. But I guess for our area of interest would be like a really good health assistant. There was this rumor before the Wear OS revamp, and when we still thought that there's going to be a Pixel Watch this year, that there's going to be this health assistant, which is obviously like a straightforward way to make a health product for Google. Everybody expects an assistant. Everybody expects health features in their wearable devices on their phones. So going forward, I think we're going to see Google trying to make a consumer health product that will have like actionable intelligence and insight on how to improve your health based on all the data you provided, be it steps, exercise, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, Google for the longest time has had, you know, tons of efforts in this area, but it's all been just scattered everywhere. I think one of the bigger stories coming out of this is how, I don't know what the implications of it are yet, but how, Google is like bringing companies or parts of companies back in under the fold of Google after they've been separated out to Alphabet.
There's an example with DeepMind, which is their dedicated machine learning team based in the UK. They brought in a team working on a medical assistant into Google Health. That's what most people are calling this new initiative. But I guess we've already seen that at Nest, and I think that was a much bigger example of being a spun out company back into Google proper.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. Does that mean that the Alphabet split was it a failure? I mean, I don't know. It's like it seems kind of counterproductive, because it seems like, I mean, let's just use the example of Nest. It's like they split it out so that Nest would have to learn how to be its own profitable arm of a company. You know, like they're pouring tons of money into building these hardware products, and then at the end of the day, not selling that many of them. So the idea was forcing discipline onto Nest, like, you know, like putting them in a situation where it's like make or break. It's like you either figure out your own hardware business or you fail, and you are you go out of business and you're no longer an Alphabet company. Like that seemed like part of the goal was that, you know, Alphabet or Google was, you know, just too big and too messy, and you know, like all the investments were all just too scattered, and so there wasn't enough focus on the bigger vision, and you know, it didn't work. And you know, Nest broke out, and they were out for 2 years, and they didn't really grow, and they were still burning money, and the end result was that Google was like, well, fine, we'll just bring them back in. And the argument for that, which we talked about this a little bit last week, which with how Google is now working on a rebrand of Nest as a whole, is that the justification was, well, if they're part of Google, then they can work closer with our AI teams, and you know, then they might succeed, or they might, you know, do better. And like tying all of our efforts, like that's the catchphrase, like putting all our efforts together. You know, it's like, well, the whole point was to not have your efforts together, and to force the independent efforts to be great by themselves. And now it's like, you know, yes, I mean, the Nest products will benefit from the Google, yeah, from Google AI being part of, you know, more closely tied in, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Okay. So more broadly, I think there are multiple factors taken into consideration. When this whole Alphabet initiative was formed, Larry Page was still CEO. And I think when Sundar came in, especially over the past year, we've seen a much more organized effort. And with the company having clearer visions and all that kind of stuff. But with this new, leaner, organized, structured Google, it makes sense to bring back the areas of similar focus, similar product groups, I think. But taking a look at Google as it is today, there's some things that could be spun out, because Google is both, okay, historically, how Google makes money is from advertising. That isn't a very consumer-focused thing. But then Google has something like Google Cloud, which is a completely enterprise thing. And at the end of the day, it's probably going to make a lot more money than any consumer-focused product, like, I don't know, like the Play Store or like even Google Hardware. Enterprise is where it's at. So maybe spin out Cloud into its own division, into its own Alphabet company, if we're talking about reinforcing the idea of this Alphabet thing where the companies that are drastically different from your ongoing focus, ongoing core, are their own thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Another layer of this conversation too is that, you know, Google's money and Google's motives coming from one place, being advertisement, still the vast majority of Google's revenue comes from ads, is with Google's hardware division being under that umbrella and being subject to that fact, mm-hmm. you know, there are some conflicts of interest, you know, like,
sure.
Really, like, I mean, some of the best argument that Apple makes for its ecosystem is just how hardline they are on privacy. You know, like in terms of capturing consumers' eyes, like, and minds, like that's a big message that people resonate with. Like Apple makes the statement that, you know, like their phones are the most private phones that you can buy in terms of mainstream, you know, options. And, you know, I think a lot of those kinds of things that Apple is doing with its phones, Google's hardware team may want to do, mm-hmm. you know, but it conflicts with the fact that Google as an organization makes the vast majority of their money from knowing everything about you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's one little conflict of interest that I think there have been reports that are like, that's tension that's growing within the company. Another thing is, you know, apparently we've heard that the Fuchsia team too, is kind of clashing with some of the long held, privacy or like norms that the Android team has had for a while. And a lot of the Fuchsia team members would like to build Fuchsia from the ground up to be a more, privacy, respecting operating system. And, you know, like, so that's another example of like, you know, there are places in the company where it seems like,
yeah,
I feel like the hardware team, like let's just use the hardware team as an example. They're going to fail if they are outside of Google because they need Google's resources to do anything. They need Google resources. But at the same time, the fact that they're under that umbrella and the fact that at the end of the day, you know, on the Google Pixel phone, the
best swiping, features, a swiping, palette.
Yeah, and swiping left from the home screen brings up a newsfeed of articles. Like, I mean, not that a newsfeed of articles is not helpful, but Google knows very well that they're making a lot of extra bucks on every Google Pixel purchase because they're pushing their ads within one tap away of the home screen. You know, that, I mean, AMP, the AMP project has made it so easy and so fast for a Google ad to be loaded from a Pixel home screen, or from any Android phone home screen for that matter, as long as they have, you know, the Pixel launcher installed or whatever. But like, you know, it's just like, that's like kind of a conflict of interest. And who, at least as of today, I don't think we're seeing any obvious cases where it's like, this is ruining the phone, this is ruining the Pixel. But I could see down the line where, you know, Google has a hard time balancing these things. What were you going to say?
But at the same time, like all these camera features, these voice recognition features, they're all powered by the close integration of their AI teams. If this was a separate company, it would be so much harder to get. Would they have their own AI researchers in? Would Google Hardware have their own AI researchers in house? No, it doesn't make sense.
Of course not.
You want to use the resources that are available to you and conserve the efforts you don't have to use up and expend. So yeah, at the end of the day, all these companies, they still want to have Google in all these products, still want to have Google in their name. They want to benefit from that, from what, how people know that this is a Google product, a Google backed product. That's similar to the search thing they love.
Yeah. Another thing though, is that I think that the ads game, the web ads game that Google's playing is like, it's kind of like a short-term vision, I guess. Like, who knows how long banner ads will stay profitable and stay. I'm not saying it's going anywhere in 5 or 10 years. I'm just saying in the long term, you know, Google's ads business may not be the best thing to be completely. I mean, right now it's like, almost all of their eggs are kind of in one basket still. And I think the one of the motivations behind the hardware effort is to diversify. You know, like I think Google genuinely wants to become a hardware player. They're investing in that space so much that I think, you know, that's undeniable. They want to be a hardware player. They want to be an Apple or a Samsung. And they would do good to be a player in those spaces, because being a seller of phones and being a seller of hardware and a respected and like very well-to-do seller of hardware would help to diversify their business and not be dependent on, you know, there's various reasons why the ads business is not necessarily a good long-term strategy. One is, say over the next 10 years, consumers become much more privacy minded. I mean, we're already seeing the fallout that's happening with Facebook and, you know, like how their tracking has affected, you know, election tampering and stuff like that. I'm just saying, like on a global scale, like what are going to be the macro level changes that happen? And given those macro level changes, you know, is who's going to be placed the best? And when it comes to privacy stuff and where your money is coming from, it seems like Apple is placed the safest. Like Apple is the most invincible to all these controversies that are happening in technology right now. At least that's what it seems like to me.
I just want to make the devil's advocate argument that the change, your fork, the chip, advertising becoming less valuable over time, that is predicated on the idea and new human nature changing, that people like free stuff. That is the biggest driver of ads. People don't want to pay. And I think that this idea that advertising as a model drastically losing its value over time is also intrinsically tied to the idea that people want free stuff at the end of the day. They want free content.
Yeah.
They want...
Yeah. There's definitely a human condition argument there. And I know that ads have been around since the beginning of whatever, and like the, you know, they've just changed medium, you know, like ads have never gone away. They've just, you know, we used to, you know, have ads in newspapers. Okay. And now we have ads in digital ads. You know, it's like the ads aren't going away. I'm not saying that ads are going away. I'm just saying that, you know, Google's ads business itself may not be the most invincible business to have. I mean, look at Facebook. So like Facebook's ads business is, you know, primarily the Facebook.com web and app, you know, like that's newsfeed. So it's like, you know, that we've already seen a certain percentage of people under 30 have just dropped Facebook completely and are now flocking to, I mean, obviously a huge percentage of people are now using Instagram, which Facebook, that was probably the smartest $1 billion they ever spent because they have a backup plan for, you know, their business that might be have under threat. I just think that, I don't know. I'm not saying ads are going away. I'm just saying that it would be good for Google to diversify. And what I'm saying is like their hardware business would be one of those great ways for hardware to be really successful and help them diversify their business. And at the same time, they are, you know, there's some conflict of interest there. And the hardware team may not be able to build the best of the best products because of the conflict of interest of Google's ad business. So I don't know. It's just, I'm not saying that Google's doomed or anything. I'm just saying that that's just a challenge that Google that the hardware team is facing, and a challenge that we've heard from sources and through the rumor mill is, you know, it's an ongoing tension at Google. And yeah. So, anyways, I'll leave that rant there, and we'll spend more time thinking about it, and we'll come back to it probably later when we've had more time to chew on it a little bit. And I guess we'll leave with this story, which was another story that came up today, which was that Google Glass. I always have such a hard time saying Google Glass. I don't know why. Google Glass. it's always been my kind of beat, I guess. And I reported that the Enterprise Edition was coming in 2015, and it wasn't officially announced until 2017. And then, so the Enterprise Edition, for those that don't know, is like the follow-up to Glass that Google is now pushing and has been pushing for a while at tons of business use cases, like factories and healthcare and stuff like that. And it's done pretty well, actually. I've actually heard, I haven't said this on publicly anywhere else, but I've heard that Google's business in the revenue they're getting from their contracts and licensing with Enterprise Edition in Enterprise has actually almost paid off the ridiculous investment that they made in Explorer Edition, which, as many of you will know, is the consumer effort that preceded everything. And had tons of marketing dollars behind it and was nutty and completely failed. But now, today, for the first time, we're seeing new Glass hardware, which is not the Glass hardware that you would all hope for. It's not the AR headset that Google is presumably working on that would eventually be some kind of consumer product. It's just a second generation version of the Enterprise Edition, which we've known about for quite a while. I did a hands-on with the Enterprise Edition and did a whole spec sheet dump, like a year ago now, something like that. So the Enterprise Edition is nothing new, but there's new hardware. I tweeted about it a couple weeks ago, and it's basically just a spec bump. As far as I've heard, the original Enterprise Edition had a lot of heat problems. So like, you know, they actually had, there were some people that were actually using like heat dissipator hardware on top of the device, because these things are on 24/7 and running at full clock speed, whatever, like under 100% load on the CPU, 100% like all the time, whenever they're being used on like factory floors, not to mention they're being worn by, you know, hot and sweaty people and in a hot and humid and sweaty environment. So it's like, you know, it's just like a tough, you know, environment for any kind of computing device. But yeah, I've heard that this device is optimizing for heat issues, and just overall spec bump. So more storage, more CPU power, better battery life. And I've heard that the first Enterprise Edition, not to mention the Explorer Edition, are, you know, just struggling because they're just dated hardware. I mean, the Intel Atom processor that's in the Enterprise Edition is just super dated. So yeah, that happened today. And I just thought I'd mention it because, you know, not every day we get to talk about Google Glass anymore. Maybe we'll get hands on with the new one.
Oh, that is still a dream, the augmented reality version that we all want, isn't it? A few more years.
Yeah, a few more years, if that.
And we have no idea if it can replace a smartphone for most people or what that future, that multi-device future looks like.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that pretty much rounds out the show. Pretty rough show because there was not any one big story. There's nothing, you know, lately, I mean, the last few weeks, there's no like recurring topics that it's like easy for us to dig really deep into, I guess. You know, before the October 4th event, it was really easy to be like, just talk about the Pixel 3 for an hour, or the Pixel Slate, or, you know, Pixelbook 2 rumors, which that's a bummer. Whatever happened to that? When are we going to have the Pixelbook 2?
Never made sense this year, but that's just me.
I wasn't going to put it past Google because, I don't know. Anyways, we don't have to get into that. That pretty much rounds out the show. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop every week here. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Wednesday afternoon or Thursday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in. As always, as mentioned, you can check out the show on youtube.com/9to5google for the live stream every Wednesday. And we have a whole archive. This is our 33rd episode, so we've got 33 hours now of content. If you want to listen to 33 hours of Steven and Abner ranting about Google stuff and Alphabet stuff.
I just want to make one programming note. We're off next week for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, you just said it. We're not having a show next week, but we will be back on... So next week is the... What is it? The 21st? We'll be back on November 28th. So... we'll see you then. Thanks for joining us as always. And thanks to Abner as well for joining me. And we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Bye.